Hello and welcome to the Leicester Mercury Talking Newspaper for the week beginning Monday, May the 6th. It is produced by Vista, telephone number 0116 249 8839. Items are selected and read by Sally and Bev, and it is recorded by Dave. Sunrise and sunset times for the week commencing the 12th of May are sunrise 5:14 a.m, sunset 8:48 p.m. And we begin with Monday's headline, Elderly Woman Fell Under Moving Bus. An elderly woman is critically ill in hospital after reportedly falling under a bus in the city centre. The 78-year-old was taken to hospital with serious injuries following the collision in Humberstone Gate at tea time on Friday. A pile of clothing and a pair of shoes next to a bus stop on the city-bound side of Humberstone Gate bore testimony to the serious nature of the collision, which happened shortly after 5 p.m. Both sides of Humberstone Gate were closed to all traffic from Charles Street to Wharf Street North, bringing chaos to bus services. Several police vehicles, including a forensic collision investigation van, were at the scene, which was sealed off for more than 2 hours on one side of Humberstone Gate. A former nurse who went to the aid of the 78-year-old pedestrian said, "I was told she fell under the bus while it was moving. I didn't see the accident, but there were a lot of people milling around all over the place, but no one going to help her. I used to be a nurse and couldn't just leave her lying there, so I went to help. There was also an air ambulance doctor there." She added, "She was conscious and talking, but I think she was in shock and that was the adrenaline going round her system. I asked her name and her age and she told me she was 78. One of her legs was very badly injured. I used my belt as a tourniquet to stop the bleeding. It upset me to see her lying there. I put a blanket over her and then they took her in the ambulance." A police spokeswoman said police were called at 5 p.m. Friday by the ambulance service reporting their attendance at a road traffic collision in Humberstone Gate in the city centre. The incident involved a pedestrian and a bus. A woman in her 70s was taken to the Queen's Medical Centre in Nottingham for treatment. Her condition was described as life-threatening. Yesterday, the statement was updated to describe the woman's condition as critical but stable.
Hundreds of students flee Block of Flats fire. Hundreds of students were evacuated from a city centre accommodation block after a fire in a kitchen on the third floor. Six fire crews from across the city and county went to Newark Street shortly after 6:30 p.m. on Friday when a fire was reported in a communal kitchen of one of the accommodation's shared flats. Students, some of whom had been asleep or in the shower getting ready for a night out, were evacuated, many in shorts and with towels around their shoulders. De Montfort University performing arts student William Kwong, 19, who lives in the Alfred Thomas building, said, "I was sleeping when there was a loud knock on the door from security telling us to get out. I ran out, literally in what I was wearing. I didn't smell smoke, but there was a burning smell." Warren Prumfan, 23, who was visiting, said, "I was in the shower. It was about 6:30. I turned it off and just got out." Zen Saki, 23, who works in the office and was visiting, said, "Security were knocking on the door, saying we'd got to get out. There was a fire on the third floor." Aidan Crosswell, 18, a first-year student at De Montfort University, has a friend who lives in the affected block. Aidan went to walk into the building carrying a McDonald's to see his mate, but was turned away. He said, "There was no fire alarm or anything, so I had no real idea what was going on." Station manager Nick Stanborough of the city's central fire station said, "The fire was in the kitchen of a communal or cluster flat on the third floor. The flat was smoke-logged and the incident commander committed two BA breathing apparatus and a main jet to put out the fire. It is thought to have been started by cooking left on a hob, but we're carrying out further investigations." The building had been evacuated when we arrived, and we checked to ensure there was no one else in the flat. An ambulance and paramedic were stood by in readiness at the scene.
Man charged after car hit by train at crossing. A 28-year-old man is facing a number of charges after a car was hit by a train on a level crossing. Police were called to the scene in Station Lane, Kirby Bellars, near Melton, at 3:30 a.m. on Saturday by a member of the public. The witness reported seeing the car being driven erratically before it collided with a barrier on the railway line, said a police spokeswoman. Officers arrived and assisted in getting the driver out of his car moments before a freight train passed through. The train hit the rear of the car, a Ford Fiesta. Nobody was injured in the incident. Thomas Dixon of Chetwynd Drive, Melton, has been charged with driving a motor vehicle when alcohol level is above the limit, dangerous driving, and obstructing an engine or carriage using the railway by an unlawful act. He has been bailed to appear at Leicester Magistrates Court on Thursday, June the 20th. Station Lane has been closed between Kirby Bellars and Ashfordby while repair work is carried out to the extensive damage caused to the level crossing, said police. The road is expected to remain closed for several weeks, said the spokeswoman. Diversions are in place around Melton. The impact of the collision and repairing broken barriers saw trains on the line, including the cross-country service from Birmingham to Stansted Airport, which goes through Leicester and Melton, having to slow going through the crossing. Jill Diamond, owner of White Lodge Boarding Kennels and Cattery, alongside the track, said, "The train involved has gone and trains are running along the line again, albeit more slowly than usual. There was a damaged car, but I'm not aware of anyone being injured. It will be some time before the damage to the level crossing is mended. We are still open and there is access to us, certainly from the A607 in Kirby Bellars." A Network Rail spokesman said, "In the early hours of the morning, a train hit a car on a level crossing near Melton. The driver of the car suffered minor injuries and the level crossing barrier sustained some damage. Trains are running but are being cautioned over the level crossing until the barriers are fixed." A spokesman for Cross Country Trains, which runs a service from Birmingham to Stansted Airport on the line, said, "There was a small delay to the first service of the day. Network Rail are on site and hope to have the situation resolved soon." A British Transport Police spokeswoman said, "Shortly after 3:34 a.m, May the 4th, British Transport Police were called to the track close to Kirby Bellars following reports that a car had been hit by a freight train at a level crossing. Officers attended the scene alongside colleagues from Leicestershire Police and the ambulance service. And a 28-year-old man from Leicester was arrested on suspicion of drink driving. There are no reported injuries and inquiries are underway to establish the circumstances leading up to the car being on the tracks. Anyone who witnessed the crash or who saw anything suspicious is asked to contact British Transport Police by calling 0800 40 50 40 or Crime Stoppers on 0800 555-111.
"You're too old for this," burglar drug addict told. A thief broke into the home of an 83-year-old woman during a campaign of burglary while the occupants were asleep in their beds. Leicester Crown Court was told the victims discovered the overnight break-ins the following morning. The burglar, Geoffrey Smalley, was given a prison sentence for the crimes on his 45th birthday. The judge told him, "You're too old for this." Smalley's barrister, Gary Short, said the defendant went off the rails after receiving a devastating cancer diagnosis and, having been clean of drugs for a significant time, relapsed into heroin and cocaine use. He committed the three house burglaries to fund his addiction to Class A drugs, the court was told. Jonathan Dunn, prosecuting, said, "Within a very short time after each burglary, he was using the victim's contactless bank debit cards at various shops. CCTV footage of those transactions led to the police identifying the defendant. Smalley admitted breaking into the home of an 83-year-old woman in Newton Burgerland, near Colville, on June the 18th last year, when electrical items, cash and bank cards were taken. He admitted burglary at a family home in Cresswell Drive, Ravenston, near Colville, on the 4th of June, when a laptop, computer tablets and mobile phones worth more than £2,500 were stolen. Smalley also pleaded guilty to burglary at a property in Main Street, Nuneaton, on June the 7th, when electrical items, cash and bank cards were taken. The recorder, Timothy Spencer QC, said Smalley had invaded the privacy of the victims' homes in a nighttime campaign of burglary. He said, "I'm satisfied you offended because of an uncontrollable addiction to Class A drugs." Recorder Spencer said Smalley had successfully come off drugs in the past, but a diagnosis of non-Hodgkin lymphoma caused him to relapse. Recorder Spencer said, "By June, you'd committed three burglaries within geographical reach of where you were then living. You went out at night and calculated how to access the properties, such as using an insecure window to get things to sell to feed your habit. The aggravating feature is the premises were occupied. People were asleep in their homes when you invaded them. They woke up to find a scene of upset, which was obviously distressing. You took valuable property, in particular bank cards. One burglary concerned the home of an 83-year-old woman. That's not to say you knew there was an elderly occupant, but that's the risk you take." Recorder Spencer went on to say, "There's real mitigation in this case. You lapsed back into drugs and offended when you couldn't cope with your medical diagnosis of a serious condition. Although that's not an excuse, it is an explanation. You committed the offences, I suspect, out of desperation for your next fix." Recorder Spencer told Smalley, "You're 45, you're too old for this." He also said, "Let this be the last time you appear in court." Smalley, of Princess Road, Atherstone, Warwickshire, was jailed for 3 years.
Please don't touch mural. Scores of Leicester City supporters have reacted to plans to move a mural painted at the height of the Premier League title-winning season. Some say the mural, showing the 12 key players for the 2015-16 campaign, along with then-manager Claudio Ranieri, should be protected. Others have welcomed the idea of moving it to a more prominent spot and adding club chairman Vice Srivananaprabhi. The club's owner, who helped make the dream come true, died in a helicopter crash at the King Power Stadium last October. Writing on the Leicester Mercury's Facebook page, Andrew Snary appeared to sum up the feelings of a typical City fan. "I live round the corner from there and pass it every day," he said. "It always puts a smile on my face and touches my heart like everyone else. I saw it being created over time again as I passed it daily and smiled at all the people there. Now, though, when I pass it, I still smile, but also hurt as no one else is there anymore. No one comes to see it, and only the locals enjoy it. To have it moved to somewhere where it will be enjoyed by thousands daily is a good idea." The mural was painted at the back of the old Marks Electrical building in King Richard's Road, Leicester, 3 years ago by London artist Richard Wilson. Like millions of people around the world, he fell in love with City's underdog story and travelled up to Leicester at the climax of the 5,000-1 league run to find a wall to work on. The new owner of the building wants to redevelop the site, but has invited Mr. Wilson back to repaint the mural in a new location. It has yet to be decided. More than 100 people commented on our Facebook page when we revealed the plan last week. Among them was Anne-Marie Hayes, who wrote, "All for it being moved, hopefully nearer the city centre, and adding the late owner would be awesome." Referring to another tribute to the owner, mooted by Keith Vaz MP, she added, "Beats having two elephants on the roundabout near Belgrave Road any day." Neil Freddie O'Connell suggested, "Relocate it at the King Power. There's plenty of boundary space." Kim B. Gilmore simply wrote, "No, don't touch it." Many agreed it should be left alone, but others said honouring the late chairman by including him would be a brilliant tribute. Sean Allen Wright was passionately against the change. "I don't care if it's being moved. It won't be the original or have the same meaning," he wrote. "It's a piece of art that shouldn't be replicated and should be enjoyed in its original format." Sanjeev Patel offered an alternative, suggesting, "Why can't the council buy the wall?" Let's face it, it was a legacy which will never be repeated in this lifetime. The planning department should be encouraging the developer to retain the wall and incorporate in the development. Abigail Smith suggested it could be reproduced above the Odeon Arcade in Kank Street, while Diane Whedon said it could be moved to the entry of the city from the M1.
Walkers again add spice to their crisps. Walker's Crisps has announced it will be teaming up with the Spice Girls for a new campaign for the first time in more than 20 years. The band, comprising four of the five original members, has been shooting a TV advert with the iconic Leicester brand. A spokesman for Walker's Crisps said, "We're delighted to announce that after 22 years, Walker's has reunited with the Spice Girls and are shooting a new ad with the girls as part of the next Walker's campaign. Walker's fans and those of the iconic British girl group are in for a real treat, so keep your eyes peeled for the big reveal." The Spice Girls are working with the company in the run-up to their upcoming UK reunion tour. It will not be the perfect reunion many had hoped for, as Victoria Beckham, aka Posh Spice, is not expected to feature in the advert as she hasn't joined the reunion tour. However, Melanie Brown, Scary Spice, Melanie Chisholm, Sporty Spice, Emma Bunton, Baby Spice, and Jerry Halliwell, Ginger Spice, are featuring front and centre. It is unknown at the moment what the advert will include, but shooting began this week, so it won't be long before it will be on our screens. The group's UK and Ireland 13-date stadium tour begins in Dublin on May the 24th. This group will not be coming to Leicester, but will be playing two nights at the Ricoh Stadium in Coventry on June the 3rd and 4th.
Taking care of business, 60 jobs are to be created as young firm expands. A care provider plans to create 60 new jobs in Leicestershire. The team at Homestead Senior Care in Charnwood, Loughborough and Colville said they plan to recruit dozens more caregivers by the end of the year to meet growing demand for their services. The business, rated outstanding by the Care Quality Commission in May last year, has just celebrated its second year in business. It provides care services for older people in their own homes and visits of at least 1 hour. Homestead owner Charlotte Johnson said regular meetings with clients and their families allows them to provide a more personalised care that can adapt to the changing needs of the client. She said, "It has been a very exciting 2 years for us, and thanks to our fantastic team and Homestead's innovative approach to delivering at-home care services, demand for our services continues to be very high. In the past 2 years, we have been rated outstanding by the CQC and have won several care awards, the most recent being Leicester's Employer of the Year Award. We celebrated our birthday at the Brewery Coffee Shop in Sileby. We enjoy a Prosecco afternoon tea, a quiz, and gave out prizes for achievements."
Historian discovers Elephant Man's grave. A verger at Leicester Cathedral who became an expert on the Elephant Man believes she has found his forgotten grave. When Joseph Merrick died in 1890, the flesh was scraped from his bones and his skeleton was put on display in the Royal London Hospital, where it remains. What happened to the flesh was a mystery. Joanne Vigor Mungovan has been hooked on history for the past 20 years after she began researching her own family's past. One distant relative she discovered was Tom Norman, the Victorian showman who took the Elephant Man around the country. That discovery led to a fascination with Merrick, and last year Joanne published a book, Joseph, The Life, Times and Place of the Elephant Man. She said, back in 1997, I saw an episode of QED on the BBC, and there was a story about a private burial Joseph Merrick was given in an unmarked grave at a cemetery in London. This April, I was talking at a conference in London, and a friend told me about a friend of hers who each year would put a bottle of gin on the grave of Jack the Ripper victim Catherine Eddowes, who is buried at the City of London Cemetery and Crematorium in Newham. Another of the Ripper's victims, Polly Nichols, is also buried there. At the conference, I was discussing the theory about the private burial for Joseph Merrick, and someone asked where I thought he was buried. I'd never really given it much thought, but I said, maybe he was at that same cemetery. The Ripper was active in 1888, and Joseph Merrick died in 1890, so it seemed plausible. Back home in Leicester, I got on my laptop and had a look at the online cemetery records, and the burial was right there, she said. Joseph died on April the 11th, 1890, and the records state that on April the 24th, a Joseph Merrick was buried at the cemetery. His residence was even listed as London Hospital, which was where he lived. It wrongly states his age as 28 instead of 27, but people often got his age mixed up. I was so happy because Joseph was a member of the Church of England, and it's good some of his remains were buried on consecrated ground. The superintendent registrar didn't know anything about the burial and was surprised. We talked about it, and we're both nearly 100% certain that is where some of his remains were buried. I feel a bit like Philippa Langley after she worked out where Richard III was buried. Joanne will be publishing a second edition of her Elephant Man book to include the new information. She is also writing a book on her relative Tom Norman. History was a hobby for many years, and because of my great-grandfather, whose house is still standing in Friar Lane, Leicester, I became particularly interested in the Victorian era, said Joanne. That's the same era as Joseph, so I developed an interest in him from there. Joanne has been involved in a campaign to get a statue of Joseph Merrick erected in Leicester. She said, we've been talking with councillors about it since last summer, and the same sculptor who did the Alice Hawkins statue, Sean Hedges Quinn, has said he's happy to do one. It's a shame we don't have one yet, because Joseph was born in Leicester and spent 22 years of his life here, so we should celebrate him more.
Unlucky for us, 13 historic buildings, city at risk of losing. As a city which discovered a king buried under a car park, you might not be surprised to know we have plenty of buildings steeped in history here in Leicester. However, Historic England says there are currently 60 important structures across Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland we could be at risk of losing. In the city alone, there are 13 of these, ranging from places of worship to castle ruins that the organisation has red flagged. But there is hope in the East Midlands. Historic England has spent £1,166,944 in grants to help some of the region's most important historic sites in the past two decades. And conservation work is ongoing for a number of the city's sites, with the hope they can be removed from the register altogether. Ben Robinson, Historic England's Heritage at Risk Principal in the East Midlands, said, over the past 20 years, we have used the Heritage at Risk Register to highlight places in need of care and attention. We have dedicated time, expertise, and money to bring cherished places back into use, and we are proud to have played our part in saving them from neglect. Despite the successes, other places continue to fall into disrepair. They have been added to the register, and we will focus our attention on them in the years ahead. The landmarks and what Historic England says are 1. HSBC Bank. The former HSBC Bank in Granby Street has an elaborate timber roof and stained glass features. The main building is currently used for worship. Stained glass windows have been repaired and the upper floors converted, but the roofs continue to deteriorate and are in need of repair. Some repairs were carried out around a year ago. 2. The iron gates behind Skeffington House in the Newark. The wrought iron gates, which had been in use at Quincy Hall and later as an entrance to the LRI, are in poor condition and decaying with the ironwork exposed. The Register reports Leicester City Council has commissioned a condition survey to inform proposals, which was due to start last year. 3. County Court, including remains of Leicester Castle. This building on the site of Leicester Castle was built by Robert Le Bossu in 1168, while the present brick facade dates to circa 1695 and was damaged in the Civil War. Repairs and conversion of the former county court to university teaching facilities have been completed and it is no longer at risk. However, the medieval John O'Gaunt cellar is still in urgent need of repair. Water creeping in is placing the fabric of the structure at risk. 4. The Newark Wall, an ancient wall dating back to 1423, which runs along the gardens of Newark House's museum, is crumbling. The wall, the boundary between the Newark and St. Mary de Castro, is deteriorating due to weathering and plant growth. 5. Turret Gateway. The ruins of the arch forming the south entrance of the inner bailey of Leicester Castle has been suffering slow decay for a number of years. Repairs have been planned to this site. 6. Abbey Ruins, Precinct Walls and Remains of Cavendish House. Sited in Abbey Park are the foundations of a 12th century Augustinian monastery, Precinct Walls and Remains of Cavendish House, a 17th century building. While the foundation walls are in fair condition, stretches of Abbot Penny's stone wall are in poor condition and some sections are at risk of collapse. A retaining wall at Cavendish House has been propped for some years. A long-term plan is in place to preserve and protect these features. 7. Parish Church of St. Peter Belgrave. The church has been closed as a place of worship since 2010. Although not in a bad state, a permanent solution to the long-term vacancy and temporary repairs has yet been found. 8. St. Saviour's Church. Significant repairs are required to the spire, roof and guttering of this church in St. Saviour's Road. Although vacant, in the latest register it says a prospective purchaser for the church has been found and planning and listed building consent applications have been submitted to enable new Christian worship. 9. Church of St. Mary de Castro. A chapel dating back to 1107 near to Leicester Castle, while still in use as a church, Historic England says the building is in need of improved facilities. 10. Magazine Gateway. The distinctive magazine building is the eastern gate of the Newark, a fortified religious college built in 1410. It was last used as a regimental museum but has been empty for around 20 years. Repairs are planned but the building has had no sustainable use for some time. 11. Leicester Hebrew Congregation. The synagogue and schoolrooms in Highfield Street had defective tower dome roof coverings which were repaired, but the fire escape has suffered considerable movement while nearby trees and clay soil put the structure at risk. 12. Serbian Orthodox Church of St. George. The church in Rutland Street is in use as a Serbian Orthodox place of worship, while work to roof coverings and timber repairs, rainwater goods and drainage was funded in 2014. The church fabric remains at risk from water penetration caused by the blockages of the high-level rainwater disposal system due to churchyard trees. 13. Church of St. Peter. Tower masonry and roof coverings were in poor condition and a fan scaffold was erected over the west door to protect visitors from falling fragments. A first phase of repairs has been completed and a second phase is planned for 2019. There are broader and considerable repairs still needed after this, however.
£1.4 million street revamp starts. Work on a £1.4 million revamp of a city centre street got underway this week. Leicester City Council has begun work on major improvements to York Road, which connects Welford Road and Oxford Street, to create a safer and more attractive route for pedestrians and cyclists. As part of the scheme, the road will be largely pedestrianised between its junction with Oxford Street and Newark Street car park. The road will be remodelled so motorists must turn left on leaving the car park, meaning the majority of York Road will be free from traffic. Vehicle access along the main stretch of York Road will only be permitted for residents, blue badge holders and businesses in the area. Footpaths will be widened in some areas and reconstructed in high quality blocks, similar in appearance to Silver Street and Guildhall Lane. The council said the improvements will fill a missing link between the new £35 million development in King Street at the city centre end of Newark and a Montfort University's campus in Millstone Lane, which has also recently seen a multi-million pound investment. It will also link to improvement work being carried out in the nearby Grange Lane and Bonners Lane. City Mayor Sir Peter Soulsby said, "At the moment, York Road is shabby and crying out for improvement. We want to transform it into a safer and much more appealing route for pedestrians and cyclists. It has the potential to be a really attractive and direct link between the recently developed Newark Centre site and the De Montfort University campus, which has also benefited from a major programme of improvements. At the same time, we're investing in our Newark Street car park to help make life easier for the hundreds of motorists that use it every day. Work on the York Road Improvement Scheme is expected to take about 6 months. In the first phase of work, two short sections of York Road will be closed to traffic, between the car park exit and Welford Road, and at the junction with Upper Brown Street. Full access will be maintained to the car park and marshalled access will be provided for businesses. Clearly signed diversions via Lower Brown Street will be in place. The work will also require some off-peak lane restrictions in Oxford Street, approaching the junction with York Road. A second phase of work is due to begin in July. Improvements have also been made at Newark Street car park. These include the creation of an additional exit for vehicles and the introduction of automatic number plate recognition to help improve the flow of traffic in and out of the car park. The York Road Improvement Scheme will be the latest phase of the City Mayor's wider Connecting Leicester programme, which is improving routes into and around the city centre and helping to make it more attractive to residents, visitors, businesses and investors. The improvements will be funded with government cash as part of the Council's successful bid for £7.8 million from the Department of Transport's Transforming Cities Fund.
Will you build a hotel on Cheapside? The creators of a Leicester version of Monopoly have announced that Cheapside will be the cheapest property on the board. On the standard London version of the board game, the lowest priced square and the first after go is Old Kent Road. Due to its long history and the word cheap in its name, the game designers have picked Cheapside, which runs between High Street and the Marketplace, to become the Old Kent Road of Leicester. The Leicester board game is due out in October, and the locations and landmarks that will take up most of the spaces are yet to be decided. Afolabi Omotala, from the game's maker, Winning Moves UK, said it was a tribute to Cheapside to give it the first spot on the board despite the low price tag. He said it may be modest in its ranking, but as far as we are concerned, it is sky high in cachet. We are extremely proud of Old Kent Road. It's high profile, much talked about, and one of only a few spaces that gets to star on the box lid. So as far as we are concerned, whichever landmark or street has landed on this prime piece of Monopoly real estate has landed a massive coup. It is also very heavily landed on when playing the Monopoly game because one chance card sends players directly there. Cheapside in real life is heavily frequented, so generally it's the perfect fit. Also considered for Leicester's equivalent of Old Kent Road, following a month-long public consultation, was Filbert Street, home for 111 years of Leicester City Football Club at Abbey Park. Afolabi said, Both the old Leicester City football ground and Abbey Park were touted for the old Kent Road spot. The old football ground because it dates back to the 1800s. Abbey Park was because it's open to all and free and doesn't price people out of things, a bit like old Kent Road. They proved stiff competition to Cheapside. News of the new game was announced in March. The public was invited at the time to send in votes and suggestions for the spaces and cards. While a Leicestershire version of Monopoly came out in 2001, there was never a game based just on the city.
Tories get majority on council. Conservatives have kept control of Rutland County Council in the latest elections. The Tories won 15 seats of the 27, down from the 18 they secured in 2015. Independent candidates took 8 seats and the Liberal Democrats 3. The Green Party also secured a seat through Miranda Jones in Uppingham. 8 places were uncontested. Councillors will gather at Rutland's annual council meeting on Monday to elect a chairman, leader and other key positions for the new administration. Overall turnout for the election was 41.5%. The ward with the highest overall turnout was Liddington, 48%. A spokesman for the authority said contact details for all elected members will be published on the Rutland County Council website in the coming days.
Car park deck shut for revamp. A large part of one of Leicester's busiest city centre car parks has closed for several months. The upper floor of the 485-space Haymarket car park shut so the council can start a £1.78 million revamp of the 1970s-built multi-storey. More than 170 spaces on the upper level will be unavailable to shoppers until mid-August, when the first phase of the improvement scheme is completed. The work is part of the City Council's wider project for the Haymarket area, which will create better access to the recently reopened theatre. Travelodge is set to open a 67-room hotel in disused office space above the shopping centre. The council apologised in advance for the inconvenience to shoppers. When the upper deck revamp is completed, it will reopen and work will shift to the covered level below, meaning some spaces on that floor will be unavailable while the repairs are carried out. The whole programme of work is expected to be completed by November. The council said it has been in discussion with nearby businesses and the theatre to ensure they are aware of the impact of the work. Reminder notices have been placed throughout the car park. There will be extensive repairs to the ageing building, including relaying large areas of the top floor outer deck and installing a weatherproof covering, drainage improvements and structural repairs to the concrete and brickwork. There will be better lighting, new electrics, improved CCTV and new cameras that read number plates. New surface level pedestrian walkways will also be installed, along with lines, signs and larger parking bays. Mayor Sir Peter Soulsby said, "Haymarket provides valuable city centre parking, but it is badly in need of upgrading, both in terms of its structure and in terms of the technology used to enable customers to use it. The extent of the improvement work means the whole top deck of the car park will be taken out of use for 4 months while we repair the whole of the decking, the drainage and the waterproofing, which obviously cannot be done while it is open. Parking will still be available on the lower level and in other city centre car parks such as Dover Street, Newark Street, Phoenix Square, Lee Circle and Upper Brown Street. It's a major programme of work, but it is badly needed to ensure Haymarket Car Park can offer high-quality, safe car parking in the city centre for many years to come." Haymarket Shopping Centre manager Tony Spencer said, "The Haymarket Car Park is a much-used and convenient place to park right at the heart of the city centre. It's great news that the car park is receiving such significant investment, which will enhance our customers' experience of visiting Haymarket. The Haymarket Shopping Centre will open as normal during these important works."
From sleeping rough to Eurovision bid, Spanky Hope's story and gig helps others. A man who rose from sleeping on the streets to a tilt at representing his country in the Eurovision Song Contest is planning a gig to pay something back to a charity close to his heart. Christopher Marks, better known by his stage persona, Spanky Van Dyke, was married and was a landlord and hotel manager before he ended up on Leicester's streets. He said his story shows homelessness can happen to anyone. Christopher spent 4 weeks sleeping rough in the city in 2011. He said, "My marriage went down the pump. I didn't cope with that very well. I didn't cope with all the hours and all the bills, and I left the family home. I came to Leicester to try to stay with my brothers, which didn't work out, and I ended up being homeless. I think support was lacking. I told the authorities, I'm sleeping by the railway station, and the answer I got back was, who isn't? After spending a month fending for myself, a room was found for him at a hostel in the city. He said, I was told, sit tight, be quiet, and the government will pay for you to be here for 2 years. You don't need to do anything. I was expecting them to say, you need to get yourself back up and back on, but nobody did. Christopher managed to find a job as a housing manager, which is the job he does today. It came with a flat. That flat saved me, and that job saved me, he said. My new life started on May the 23rd, 2011, the day I started my new job and the day I moved into the flat. A big part of Christopher's new life has been his music. As part of the tongue-in-cheek pop-punk band The Budgie Smugglers, he applied to be on the 2016 Eurovision Song Contest, although the band were not selected by the BBC for their short list of six acts. As a solo artist, Spanky Van Dyke has performed 149 gigs of his trademark synth and vocals. His 150th solo gig will take place in Wigston this month, with proceeds going to Action Homeless to support other people affected by homelessness. He's planning a nostalgic, foot-stomping show and is offering free pizza to anyone who comes along. He said, I entertain. That's the idea. That's why the stupid name, because people don't forget a silly name. What I want is for everybody to have a good time, and I want them to decide what they put in the tin. I've never spoken about my homelessness before, but because I want to do the charity gig, it is very relevant now, and it gives me a chance to put something back. I see more people out there and more horrible things happening to them. They need to be helped back up again. We all need support, and that is very true when you're homeless. If I could decide on how the money will be spent, I would invest in a good mental health institution, a good drop-in centre, with good advisors, good people to talk to, because that didn't happen for me. Spanky's charity show takes place at the Tap and Barrel in Wigston on Thursday the 30th of May from 7:30 p.m.
Woman's 740-mile round trip to try on jacket at City Shop. A woman made a 740-mile round trip to shop at an independent store in Leicester. Jacket Gough travelled from Fife in Scotland to Stonygate to try on a second-hand jacket and to buy a pair of black leggings. The 58-year-old, who works in financial services, made a pilgrimage to Rescue at Venus Cow boutique in Francis Street. Jackie said, "My sister had bought me a pair of the perfect black leggings, PBL, from Venus Cow for Christmas, and I love them. I wanted a new pair, so I went online to check out the company. What I saw was a lovely store and a pre-owned Jean Muir jacket for £50. I have loved Jean Muir's clothes since I was young and wanted to own one of her jackets in my 20s and 30s, but could never afford the hundreds of pounds they cost. Here was a chance to try one on which cost just £50. What also appealed to me was that the leggings were top quality and made in Leicester. I just had to go." Holly Yanez, who runs Venus Cow with her business partner Shirley Yanez, said she nearly threw Jackie out of the shop. She said, "You have to be a customer of ours to shop in here, and I did not recognise her or know her, so I was thinking of asking her to leave. But she told me about how her sister had bought her a pair of our leggings and that she had travelled down from Fife to see the store. I was absolutely astonished that she'd made that journey to see us and to learn about what we do. Jackie bought the jacket, a top and another pair of leggings at the store, which she stocks pre-loved designer clothes. She stayed in a bed and breakfast near Bradgate Park with husband Chris, who attended Marillion Weekend 2019 at De Montfort Hall, and is planning another trip down to Leicester so she can get the full styling experience at the store. She said, "I really love my new jacket, and so does everyone who has seen me in it. Sadly, I did not have time to talk to Holly and Shirley about them styling me. That really appeals to me, and I think I could be making another pilgrimage to Leicester."
Bike maker dismisses concerns of auditor. The boss of Norton Motorcycles says the business is going from strength to strength, despite questions raised in its latest set of annual figures. Stuart Garner said sales at home and abroad have shot up, with new models released or in the pipeline, and that Norton is weeks away from opening a £1.5 million factory. He spoke after a report by auditors raised questions about matters such as investments in a US operation and stock quantities, and suggested income and pre-tax profit might have been overstated. The auditor's report, part of Norton's accounts for the year to March the 31st, 2018, when turnover was £6.7 million and pre-tax profits were £33,701, said a material uncertainty exists that may cast significant doubts on the company's ability to continue as a going concern. Mr. Garner said the Castle Donington business was not in trouble and he had decided to stop using the auditor that completed the report, Derby firm HSKS Greenhall. He said he was raising a formal complaint with the Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales. HSKS Greenhull Managing Director Colin Peacock said he was unable to comment for reasons of confidentiality and a duty of care to clients. Mr. Garner said, rather than being in trouble, the business had seen growth at home and overseas in the 12 months since the period the figures relate to, with investments in new engines and models and strong order books. At the start of the year, the business announced a £20 million export deal with Japan, which will support UK jobs and see about 1,000 motorbikes sold in Japan over the next 5 years. Mr. Garner said, "All I want to do is make motorbikes, and I've ended up with the issues raised by this report and delays associated with it, and it's been very frustrating for us. We have already moved on and are about to instruct a new auditor. We are in the strongest position we ever have been, and I think we'll build 1,000 bikes this year. If you look at the report, it's nearly 2 years ago, and we're growing with new models and new markets, with a big order book and new workforce. We won't comment on turnover for the most recent year, as it's not a publicly listed build business." He said a warning from Companies House to strike off the business on March the 5th, withdrawn 4 days later, had been because of a substantial delay in the report being filed. Mr. Garner said Norton had big orders lined up with China as well as Japan and hoped to benefit in the medium term from new tariff agreements between the UK and territories such as India, the Far East and Latin America post-Brexit. He said, "We're keeping customers in Europe happy and have trips planned to take on deals in North America and are expanding in Australia. We have put new models on the market and have three further models to release in the next 12 months. The new factory will be ready in 5 or 6 weeks.
Contactless payments for parking still on hold. Drivers are still waiting for contactless parking meters to be activated in Hinckley, 3 months after they were due to be up and running. Delays in carrying out tests on the pay and display machines has meant they are yet to be turned on. Hinckley and Bosworth Borough Council announced the new meters in January, saying then they would be available for motorists to use 2 weeks later. A spokesman for the authority said, "We apologise for the delay in bringing the new car park machines into use. Unfortunately, it is taking longer than originally anticipated to complete the necessary tests on that, on what will be a new form of payment for this authority. As soon as those checks have been completed, the machines will be open for business, offering our customers the option of paying for parking using a contactless card, as well as the more traditional cash. Council declined to set a new date for when the meters will be in operation. The pay and display machines will be able to take contactless and debit card payments and will be put in place at the Leisure Centre, Church Walk and St Mary's Road car parks. Others will be rolled out in the town later in the year. The council announced the rollout on its Facebook page. Some users have responded with concerns. One said, "That's fine till someone gets your card number. And what about older people who only go into the bank for money because they're afraid to use machines?" Another said, "It's poorly designed. The keypad to type in the registration number is too low down." Others said it was about time Hinckley was brought in line with other towns. One said, "This has been a very long time coming. I constantly go out without the right money in change." Another driver said, "Good move, well done. Went to the Leisure Centre this morning, had to stop for cash on the way, then break the note for some change. I frittered the rest away, so it's basically cost me £10 to park for a couple of hours. It's these little things that make a difference." Parking charges across the town remain the same at 60p for up to an hour and £2 for 3 hours in short-stay car parks. The charge is £2.50 for more than 5 hours in long-stay car parks.
Robbery terror at bank. Armed men smashed a car through the window of a bank before robbing the screaming cashiers. Four balaclava-clad robbers, armed with crowbars and baseball bats, struck at the Santander branch in the Parade Odeby at 8:40 a.m. yesterday. Bystanders defied their shouts to stop filming and recorded the raid on mobile phones. An employee at Timpson said they were screaming at people and the ladies working inside the bank were screaming. It was fairly scary. The men were shouting, "Stop filming," at me and others, but no one stopped. Kin Nagra, manager at the post office two doors along from Santander, was shouted at by the masked men. He said, "I was serving a customer and as he walked out, there was a sound like a bad crash. He rushed back in and said I should call 999. After I called the police, I put my head out of the door and there were three or four men in balaclavas robbing the Santander. One shouted at me, 'Get back in.' So I got back in and I locked the door. It was scary. Those filming the robbery were yelled at to stop. An employee at Timpson's in the Parade carried on regardless. He said, 'They were screaming at people and the ladies working inside the bank were screaming. It was fairly scary. I was standing quite close, just outside our shop, filming it. The men had crowbars and were shouting, "Stop filming," at me and other people across the road who had their phones out. But no one stopped filming. I've handed the footage over to the police. A woman working at another nearby business said it was horrible. We heard a loud bang and thought it was a car crash, but then there was screaming. We realised they were robbing the bank and locked our door. Sarah Franklin, who works at the Cats Protection charity shop nearby, said, "I arrived just after it happened. As I tried to get into the car park at the back, a policeman cut me off and said it was a crime scene. It makes you feel unsafe. I really feel awful for the people who were working in there. Odeby used to be nice. Now there are break-ins and people shoplifting constantly, and now this, it's a bit scary." In nearby Cartwright Drive, a black car with small fragments of glass had been abandoned and had a police officer watching over it. Police said no one was injured in the incident. A spokesman said officers were called to the premises today following a report a black 4x4 vehicle had reversed into the building. It is understood four men who were wearing balaclavas and in possession of items believed to have included baseball bats then made their way into the building. A deposit machine was damaged and cash taken before the suspects left. No cash was taken from an ATM in the building. Staff members were in the premises at the time. No injuries have been reported. Detective Inspector Mark Parrish said, "The investigation is at a very early stage and we're urging anyone who was in the area and has any information to make contact. We understand people may have filmed the incident. If you have not already handed this to us, we urge you to do so. Anyone who has any CCTV or dash cam footage should also check this and get in touch."
Anti-bullying charity Helps. Trainers from the Diana Award Anti-Bullying Charity have helped lead anti-bullying training for secondary school pupils. Josh Buckland and Charlton Brown discuss cyberbullying, prejudice and ways students can support at Judge Meadow College in Evington, Leicester, with pupils from Lionheart Trust and other East Midlands schools. Role play and group problem solving activities were used to inspire students to go back to their schools and set up their own anti-bullying initiatives. Josh said, "We have visited more than 400 schools in the past 12 months, and in every one we get such a positive reaction. The work we do supports pupils in seeing what they can do to help themselves and each other, and the messages and ideas they take back will make a massive difference to every pupil." Alongside Judge Meadow, St Paul's Catholic School, City of Leicester, Crown Hills, Humphrey Perkins, Beecham College, Sir Jonathan North and Saw Valley took part. Charlton said, "Even though cyberbullying is what's being talked about on the news, most bullying is still verbal and mainly about appearance. Whatever the bullying, though, in a lot of cases it leads to depression and social anxiety. Judge Meadow has its own team of anti-bullying ambassadors who help set up the event. The ambassadors support students in need, develop anti-bullying strategies and liaise with staff on issues around bullying and safeguarding." Year 8 student Mohammed Yusuf Rashid said, "It's good other schools want to do this training because anti-bullying is very important in schools and it's good to have days like this to show how much we all care about it." Emma Culverwell, strategic lead for the anti-bullying at Judge Meadow, said, "The work the trainers do is so empowering and you can see the effect on students." The Diana Award was established in 1999 by the government to continue Princess Diana's legacy, establishing a way to recognise young people making changes.
Casualty cut free of car after collisions. A man was cut free from the wreckage of a car and taken to hospital after a three-vehicle crash on the A46. The 20-year-old was taken to the Queen's Medical Centre in Nottingham after the crash on the northbound section of the A46, near to the turn-off for Wanlip, on yesterday morning. A police spokesman said, "We were called to a report of a road traffic collision with a number of vehicles involved. One person has been taken to hospital with non-life-changing injuries. Fire crews from Birstall and Western stations were called out to the incident at 8:40 a.m. A fire and service spokesman said, "A 20-year-old man who was being treated in the vehicle by the ambulance service was extricated and taken to QMC. We then made the vehicles safe." Highways England closed the northbound section of the A46. There were long tailbacks in the area and traffic was backed up close to the A50. The carriageway was reopened at about 10:20 a.m.
Grandad tells of TUI plane's frightening emergency touchdown. A couple coming home from a week in Tenerife were on board a flight that made a frightening emergency landing at East Midlands Airport. Colin and Andrea Whelan were with their 10-year-old granddaughter Casey on the TUI flight, which had problems with its wing flaps on the way down to land. Wing flaps alter the shape of the wings, allowing it to glide more gently to the ground. But as the TUI flight began its descent towards East Midlands Airport, the captain realised something was wrong with the system. "The first thing we noticed was that as we were going down to land, we started to rise again," Colin, 84, said. "I think this happened more than once." The captain came on the PA and said the flaps were not in the right position. "It sounded to me like a mechanical problem. Then we went up again and began circling. We were in the air much longer than we should have been. I think they wanted to use up fuel. It was frightening and there was a bit of nervous conversation in the cabin. It was a position I've never been in before in 44 years of flying and one I never want to be in again." The Boeing 737-800 ultimately touched down, but it came down more heavily than Colin expected and emergency service vehicles rushed out onto the tarmac to meet the plane. Colin of Market Bosworth said, "The landing didn't seem a usual one. We touched down heavily and the reverse engines to slow the plane down seemed louder than they normally do." The captain then thanked us for our patience. He did extremely well and I can't praise him enough for his skills. The plane had departed from Tenerife at 7:49 p.m. on Sunday, April the 28th, and had been due to land at Eastmills Airport at 12:10 a.m. the following day. It eventually touched down at 12:35 a.m. A spokesman said from TUI, formerly Thompson's Holidays, said in a statement, "We would like to apologise to customers travelling on flight TOM772N from Tenerife south to East Midlands for any inconvenience caused. Due to a technical issue and as a precautionary measure, the aircraft conducted a priority landing into East Midlands Airport. The aircraft landed safely and the flight was met by emergency services, which is in line with standard procedures."
Mum went on Skegness trip after killing her newborn baby, court is told. A woman accused of the cold-blooded killing of her newborn daughter behaved normally and even went on a trip to Skegness after giving birth in secret, a murder trial was told. Hannah Cobley allegedly deliberately inflicted 3 skull fractures and a brain injury to the infant and abandoned her, wrapped inside plastic bags in undergrowth behind an outbuilding where she lived in the early hours of April the 26th, 2017. Within hours of the alleged killing, the 29-year-old was said to have routinely fed the horses at home, Staunton Farm, in Stony Stanton. She then drove her aunt to Skegness for an overnight stay with her grandparents in a caravan. Leicester Crown Court was told Cobley's close-knit family had no idea she was pregnant or had disposed of her baby after covertly giving birth in an outside toilet. Jonas Hanking, QC, prosecuting, told the jury this was a cold-blooded killing intended to conceal the fact of the pregnancy and the existence of the baby. That's what all this case reduces that to. The injuries were clearly inflicted with an intention to kill the baby. What other intention could here have been? He claimed the child was not stillborn, as the defendant claimed, and would have survived for about 2 hours following the birth, at between 2 a.m. and 2:45 a.m. Cobley's aunt, Tracy Freer, told the jury that at about 9:45 a.m. that day, she and the defendant set off on a prearranged trip to Skegness. Cobley was driving. Mrs. Freer said her niece appeared pale, she said. I asked if she was all right. She said she thought she was going down with a cold, saying she'd been out early to do the horses. Her hair was wet, and she said she still felt very cold. The purpose of the visit was to join Mrs. Freer's parents, the defendant's grandparents, at a holiday caravan. Mrs. Freer said, after arriving in Skegness at lunchtime, Cobley was shaking, saying she was freezing. Cobley bought pain relief tablets, saying she had slight backache and thought she was going down with the flu. They stayed overnight in the caravan with Cobley, saying she felt a bit better the next day. The defendant then drove them both home from Skegness. Mrs. Freer said her niece appeared to be her normal, quiet self. Asked by Mr. Hankin if her niece said anything to raise any concerns, Mrs. Freer said no, she was probably a bit quieter than normal. When cross-examined by the defence, Mrs. Freer said the defendant was a reserved and shy person who would not easily share something. Hannah Cobley's grandfather, Ivan Dexter, said she and his daughter, Tracy Freer, joined him and his wife overnight at a holiday caravan in Skegness on April the 26th, 2017. He said his granddaughter appeared tired and said she was cold. When asked by Cobley's barrister, Mr. Dexter agreed his granddaughter did not usually show much emotion. Cobley's cousin, Mandy Dexter, told the jury she lived at the defendant's family home where they kept horses for show jumping. She said, "We're cousins, but we've grown up pretty close, like sisters." The first she knew anything was wrong was when the defendant collapsed on the night of April the 29th and was taken to hospital. Miss Dexter said, "I asked her if she was bleeding, if she'd had a miscarriage." Miss Dexter said she could see there was blood in the bathroom where the defendant had collapsed. Mr. Hankin asked Miss Dexter, "Did you suspect she was pregnant?" Miss Dexter said no. Miss Dexter said she was at Leicester Royal Infirmary when Cobley had a conversation with her mother, Lisa Cobley, on April the 30th. Miss Dexter said Lisa asked her daughter if the baby had been alive and the defendant said no. Mr. Hankin said she asked if the baby had been blue in colour. Do you remember that? Miss Dexter said she didn't know if the baby was blue, but said the baby hadn't been breathing. Cobley's barrister, Andrew Smith QC, said Hannah was very upset throughout the time you were with her at hospital. Miss Dexter said yes. Mr. Smith said, although close, she wouldn't discuss personal topics. No, agreed Miss Dexter. Due to birth-related bleeding, Cobley had a blood transfusion and had an operation at LRI. Because there was no baby, when it was clearly a viable pregnancy, concerns were relayed to Pauline Kozer, ward manager at the hospital's maternity assessment unit. Mr. Hankin said, you had to establish the whereabouts of the baby, whether it was alive or dead. Miss Kozer, that's correct. She said the defendant told her she had passed something in the toilet and had not been aware of the pregnancy at the time. Mr. Hankin said, she told you she flushed the toilet. Yes, said Mr. Kozer. She was quite distressed. The trial continues.
And now for a selection of letters. It's good to see Roy back at Grace Road. After a short spell as interim chief executive at Grace Road, Roy Bent has recently replaced the outgoing chairman, Paul Hayward. It really shows his dedication to Leicestershire after being a lifelong supporter and a volunteer to the very successful Friends of Grace Road, where he has often been found in recent seasons serving the lovely tea and cake that the organisation provides. It just goes to show that exciting times these are to be a Leicestershire supporter, with new chief executive Karen Rothery now fully installed, Paul Nixon as head coach with an improving squad, and the many hard-working people at the club. So it's good to see you back so soon, Roy, as we look forward to the next chapter of success at the club. And that's from Oliver Hawke of Great Glen.
HGV routes are not altering, just times. I'm writing in response to the letter from R. Thomas, HGV route is a matter for the County Council, mailbox May the 6th. Mr. Thomas correctly states that Leicestershire County Council, as the local highway authority, would be responsible for changing the designated HGV routes through Leicestershire. As Mr. Thomas refers to, there are routes available to HGVs, one via Markfield and one via Kirby Muxlow, and residents in Desford Road are requesting that all HGV traffic to and from the Pound Stretcher site should travel via Markfield. What I want to make clear is that the planning application submitted to Hinckley and Bosworth Borough Council by Pound Stretcher does not propose changes to these designated routes for HGVs. This is an application by Pound Stretcher to extend its hours of operation outside peak traffic times, not the routes taken by HGVs to access the site. As a consultee, the County Council can only respond about the proposed changes of hours, and we don't have concerns about the capacity of the road network in relation to the proposed extension of hours on these designated HGV routes. Our position remains that Pound Stretcher's ability to vary the times when vehicles can journey to or from their site is a matter for Hinckley and Bosworth Borough Council to decide, and any objections should be made to Hinckley and Bosworth's Planning Department application number 19/00253, and that's from Anne Carruthers, Director of Environment and Transport at County Hall, Glenfield.
Pigeon shooting ban on farmers is crazy. So, farmers are not allowed to shoot wood pigeons anymore. My mate is a farmer and his oilseed rape crop this year is being laid bare by these birds eating it. It's not just 10 to 15 birds. There are about 60 to 70 pigeons at a time, leaving large patches in the field near Thurcaston bare. So if he is not allowed to shoot them, there will be hundreds of them, which will put up food prices before too long due to poor yields on all types of crops. This is a crazy ban. And that letter's from Cliff Burdett of Leicester.
Airport improvements can't come too soon. I write following your report about East Midlands Airport getting some improvements. Extension to arrivals terminal is approved, Mercury the 8th of May. I can only add that this is very much overdue. We travel often, and quite frankly, East Midlands Airport is a disgrace. Last month, the queues to get through the security went as far back as the check-in desks. Even if you're on time for your flight, it would have made you panic at how long it would take to get through to the departures area. That can then only impact on how long customers would spend in the duty-free area or bars and restaurants, so surely they're missing out on custom. When we were last there were only 3 security areas out of 8 open. A shortage of staff, or maybe no one knew how many flights and passengers there would be on that day. Having worked for many years in the travel industry myself, I find that hard to believe. On our return at midnight on a very cold and windy evening, we then had to queue again, virtually outside, in what looks like a pre-war tunnel. When you finally got inside, the queues go on. Trying to get through the electronic passport control immigration becomes quite an ordeal. Passengers who are older or with children were starting to look very fraught and tired. It is a sad reflection of what we can offer as a homecoming or for visiting tourists. They must wonder where they've arrived with such basic facilities. On the plus side, having needed some assistance in the past for a disability, the staff have excelled and things worked very smoothly. However, most passengers do not require help, but should really be offered a better service than they normally receive at this poor airport. I hope it improves very soon, as I think Birmingham is much better. And that's by F. Olson from Tugby.
And this letter is from Eileen Letts of Glenfield. We should be proud of our national treasure. I feel privileged to have spent a pleasant hour listening to Sir David Attenborough, one of the greatest personalities of our age, on Radio Leicester. He has made an even bigger impression on me by his warm references to Leicester and Leicestershire's countryside. As he said, it isn't possible to find its like anywhere in the world. He was referring to our county's lovely landscapes and the villages with a church and small cottages, and also Leicester's ambience. Sir David's absolutely perfect elocution kept me glued to my radio every second with the interesting events and happenings of his life. We are right to be proud of someone who has raised in Leicester and educated as a boy in Leicester Wiggerson Boys School and eventually Cambridge. Such a wonderful gentleman of 90 years old plus.
Mark Jones of Hereford says, "Thanks for getting me home after breakdown. I wanted to say a big thank you to the man and woman who kindly came to help me get my old Austin Healey started when it broke down in the middle of the highway near Morrison's in Hinckley today, Thursday. I eventually made it back to the Welsh borders with the help of the bump start. Thank you once again for your kindness."
We have now reached the end of the Leicester Mercury Talking newspaper. If you wish to contact the Sound Services Department of Vista, please telephone the Vista helpline on 0116 249 8839. And it's goodbye from Sally.
And goodbye from Bev.